This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, we are slated to speak with Jerry Mitchell, one of the most prominent investigative reporters in the United States. He works for the Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi. He's been involved in solving several cold cases of murders during the civil rights tumult of the 1960s, and he'll comment on the death of Edgar Ray Killen, convicted in the 1964 killings of three rights workers in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Also, Ray Strother, the legendary political consultant, and Faye Williams, the noted activist on The President and the Porn Star, and Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council of Baton Rouge, defending the president. And we'll also hear from George Ann Meir, president of the Greater Baton Rouge Learning Disabilities Coalition, on helping kids with learning disabilities. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And we begin today with Jerry Mitchell, one of the top investigative reporters in America. He works for the Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi. And he has received more than 20 national honors for his investigative work, including a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. And he has been involved in putting at least four Klansmen behind bars for acts of violence they committed in the 1960s during the civil rights tumult that is now certainly being focused upon as we speak more and more. And last week, Edgar Ray Killen, who was convicted in the 1964 killings of three civil rights workers in Philadelphia, Mississippi, died in prison at the age of 92. And Jerry Mitchell, it took a long time to bring Mr. Killen to justice, but it finally happened, and you were a big part of that.
Well, there are a lot of people involved in that, and it did take many years. I mean, I actually, believe it or not, started writing about the case in 1989, and he was finally convicted in 2005. So I wrote about other cases in between, but I'm just, it took a long time.
It took 16 years, and he survived some close calls and trials, but he was a free man for a very long time.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he, in case people are wondering, he was not, you know, very penitent or you know what I mean? His racial views had not changed as well over the years. So he, you know, I asked him if he had anything to do with the killings. He told me, you know, that he didn't. But then I asked him, well, what do you think should happen to the people that were responsible? And he just said, I'm not going to say they were wrong, what he told me. And then he proceeded to tell me about the FBI agents who came and interviewed him after Martin Luther King was assassinated. You know, the kind of FBI agents at the time King was killed didn't know who did it and just kind of went around and started interviewing folks and trying to find out their whereabouts on April 4th, 1968. Killen wouldn't talk to him. One of the agents left his card. And so time went on. Killen picked up the card and called the agent and asked him who killed King. And the agent's like, why do you want to know? And Killen said, man, I want to shake his hand.
My goodness. And he was a preacher, too.
Yeah, he was. He was. That's, in fact, that's kind of his name. People locally call him Preacher Killen.
And in 92, he died this month in prison at Parchman, Mississippi. And as you say, was not repentant up until the time he died. And he was,
as far as I know, I mean, you know, maybe he changed his mind toward the end. But he did some interviews with some other newspapers that indicated that as well.
And this particular killing, which is infamous and known worldwide, of the three civil rights workers, it happened about a year after the murder of Medgar Evers, which you also have followed that trail.
Medgar Evers is a fascinating case as well, and the three civil rights workers, of course, were killed by about 20 Klansmen who basically, it was all planned out. They arrested the three civil rights workers, kept them in jail, released them at night, kind of into the hands of the waiting Klansmen. You know, it was something they had done before, actually. Not necessarily ending in, maybe some had ended in murder, but the case I'm talking about was a young black man was abducted and taken out and basically finally let go. But in this case, they were, you know, the plan was to take care of them. So they killed them, shot them and killed them, and buried them 15 feet down an earthen dam. And really a miracle they were ever found. The FBI got a tip where they were buried. And so were able to, you know, brought in bulldozers and everything. But, you know, unless they had gotten that tip, they would have never found, you know, never found the bodies. It was 44 days later.
Well, Jerry was involved in bringing Mr. Killen, Preacher Killen, to justice, but also was involved in bringing Byra De La Beckwith to justice for mm-hmm. the murder of Mr. Evers.
Right. That was a fascinating case. And Byra De La Beckwith was at least in person, you know, even far more racist than Edgar Ray Killen. He was a part of what's called Christian Identity, which is this kind of white supremacist religion, I guess you could call it. So anyway, I went and interviewed him. I spent about 6 hours with Mr. Beckwith in his home in Tennessee and talked to him about 6 hours. And when we got done, it was getting dark. And so, as I always say, Signal Mountain's a beautiful place when it's getting dark, but not so much when you're with Byra De La Beckwith. So he insisted on walking me out to the car, and I'm like, really? You know, that's okay. I think I can find that way. So he walks me out to the car anyway and gets me out there and says, if you write positive things about white Caucasian Christians, God will bless you. If you write negative things about white Caucasian Christians, God will punish you. If God does not punish you directly, several individuals will do it for him. And so his wife had made me a sandwich. Huh. I think you can guess what I did with the sandwich.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But that was obviously a threat. And did at any time did you feel in danger?
I mean, I felt concerned, I guess, is accurate. I mean, wasn't just from him, but from other folks as well. You know, death threats. I mean, basically more outright death threats, you know, or things like a Klansman told me he had photographs of me and my family and knew where we lived and, you know, things like that. It's obviously mm-hmm. meant to, you know, try to
Jerry,
get your skin.
You were motivated to pursue this course and chasing these evil men by watching Mississippi Burning. At least that's what story says. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually correct. I saw that with a couple of FBI agents who investigated that case and a journalist who covered it. So they started explaining everything to me. I mean, I didn't know a lot of this. I mean, 99% of it. So they really started explaining to me what really happened. The movie's a fictional film. And so they started kind of explaining what really happened.
You were also involved in bringing people to justice for the firebombing of NAACP leader Vernon Dahmer. This was the Imperial Wizard Sam Bowers. That one was another infamous killing in 1966. And also Bobby mm-hmm. Cherry for the 1963 bombing of the Birmingham church that killed four girls. So you've mm-hmm. been on the front lines of some of the most infamous cases in American history.
I've been very blessed. I don't consider it great talent. I just consider myself to be in the right place at the right time with a lot of talented folks. And I'm certainly not the only one that worked on these cases. A ton of people worked on these cases who deserve a lot of credit. And the juries that convicted the folks, obviously, deserve a lot of credit as well. And it's just a lot of people involved. And I've just been very fortunate. I guess kind of the interesting note on the on the Birmingham case, the postscript is Doug Jones, who prosecuted the case, is now in the, just got elected to the U.S. Senate. So that's kind of fascinating to watch that. So.
That was, of course, the Roy Moore race, and what a race it was. Do you think we're going to have more of these cases solved in the years to come?
I don't. From this era, I don't, because the people who carried out the killings, most of them are dead, and maybe the few that are alive, you know, there's just not enough evidence to be able to prosecute. You know, witnesses are dead, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it makes it, and that's the problem. These cases should have been prosecuted at the time. I mean, that's, you know, the basic problem. All these cases should have been prosecuted at the time. And a lot of times weren't investigated like they should have been investigated. Emmett Till is a great example of that. They just, you know, when you have the sheriff working for the defense, that's not a good sign, you know.
Well, lastly,
the sheriff helping out the defense with jury selection.
That's a difficult hurdle.
But that's fine for the defense.
We only have a few seconds, and certainly we look forward to talking with you again soon. But you're a son of the South. This had to be a difficult story for you to cover.
Yeah, and it's a good reminder to us in the South that these things went on at the time, and. You know, I just think of it, it's never too late. I mean, I always think there was always something that can be done.
Well, Jerry, we thank you for joining us. We'll be back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. 877-217-5757 is your toll-free number. And if you're calling in Baton Rouge, you can dial 297-5633 or send us an email anywhere you are at talk@talklouisiana.org. This is how Newsweek magazine terms the latest controversy swirling about the president, Donald John Trump, on day number 370 of his presidency. Who is Tony Perkins? Evangelical Christians don't care about Stormy Daniels' Trump claims, he says. This is a story about the man from Baker, Louisiana, Tony Perkins, former state lawmaker, the man who crafted the covenant marriage law in Louisiana. And the story starts this way. President Donald Trump is the leader evangelicals have been looking for. Despite his questionable moral behavior and alleged affair with porn star Stormy Daniels, the statement comes courtesy of Tony Perkins, the president of the Conservative Family Research Council, who spoke with Politico. Evangelical Christians were tired of being kicked around by President Obama and his leftists, and I think they're finally glad there's somebody on the playground that's willing to punch the bully. This is from Perkins. When questioned about whether the desire to punch the bully is in line with Christian values, Perkins said, you know, you only have two cheeks. And Stormy Daniels, who's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, her given name is Stephanie Clifford, graduate of Scotlandville Magnet, 1997, reportedly had an affair with the president 4 months after his wife Melania gave birth to their son Barron. And the Wall Street Journal, which has been hammering Robert Mueller, the special counsel, in its editorial pages, is the entity that broke this story. Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, according to the story, arranged to pay Stormy Daniels $130,000 in hush money days before the presidential election of 2016. Perkins, as we know, is an evangelical activist and is a frequent visitor to the Oval Office. He's prayed with the president during his presidency, and in November, he was accused of helping cover up sexual assault allegations against a Republican state lawmaker in Ohio. That legislator, who was a vocal advocate for the values that Tony Perkins supports, was forced to resign after he was caught having sex with a man in his office. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we begin our discussion about this with Faye Williams, the longtime activist, former congressional candidate, and she is based in Washington. And Faye Williams, your thoughts about whether the president will be held accountable by particularly evangelical Christians for his alleged misdeeds.
Well, Jim, I just have the question of whatever happened to family values or Christian values? I mean, doesn't respect for one's spouse matter anymore? I'm very disappointed with the evangelicals like, you know, Franklin Graham and others, because they expect all of us to be, to bend to their way, to be almost perfect, and yet they say they didn't think that Donald Trump was a perfect president, and that's okay with them. I just don't understand how religious leaders can be so casual about this, but expect the rest of us to bend to their way. You know, the nation did not elect a perfect president ever, but there is a standard of behavior to which we hold our leaders, and this leader has just gone so far beyond or below what we would expect of a leader in our country, so much so that he's brought us down. He's just, you know, just brought us. We have no standard of decency on the part of our leaders, and that's something we have a right to expect.
A Pew Research Center poll shows that the president's support among white evangelical Christians has dropped from 80% in February of last year to 61% in December. And this was before the latest revelations or allegations about Stormy Daniels and President Trump. And this is a story, Faye Williams, that in another time would have singularly caused a president or a candidate for the highest office in the world to perhaps withdraw from the scene. But with Donald Trump, it seems that each day brings controversy, and each day he survives the controversy. Do you think this will continue, or is he potentially on the ropes because of this?
Well, it can't continue. I mean, he has you know, pushed our standing. He's damaged our standing on leadership in the world. At one time, you know, our president was known as the leader of the free world. I don't see how anyone would consider him a leader. In fact, it's doing so much damage, I'm not sure how many years it will take to undo it. I think this time people do have to rise up. We've seen that women have been rising up against inequities in our lives. And I think it's time now for the men also, more men, I should say, because there have been many who've been supportive of it, to join us and talk about some form of decency, to set some standards. We've been setting those standards and having expectations of members of Congress. So it's time we have, you know, those same kinds of standards, at least for the president of the United States. Young people are looking at what he does, and this is ruining our ability to influence young people to lead better lives and to be leaders if we continue to allow them to watch Donald Trump and to allow him to get away with all the things that he's doing.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to join the conversation with Faye Williams. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with Dr. Williams.
Good morning. And Dr. Williams, it's always a joy to hear you on Jim's program.
Thank you so much.
I deeply respect and admire what you believe in and stand for. You know, Billy Graham, many years ago, I heard him say, the message of the Christian Bible is love thy neighbor. What does it say about the hypocrisy in the Republican Party? Because Robert Mann wrote a column recently that appeared in the New Orleans Picayune saying the reason not a single representative from Louisiana in Congress spoke out against Donald Trump's, I think, horribly racist words, and it's not fit to be repeated on family radio, because the constituents of those people are essentially racist. And what does it say about the character and decency of the Republican Party in Louisiana when the person who was the keynote speaker at Duke Fest, Keith Rush, in 1991 at the Old City Park driving range in New Orleans on July 4th, he went on to be elected several times to the Republican Party State Central Committee.
All right, Faye Williams, what about, thank you, David, what about the fact that the lawmakers, not only in Louisiana, but really all over the South, Republicans, are not criticizing this president, not only for the allegations about Stormy Daniels, but also about the asshole statement that he was accused of saying a few days ago in the Oval Office in a meeting with lawmakers?
Well, you know, I don't like to use name-calling, but I have to say, at a minimum, these people are hypocrites. And the ones who call themselves religious leaders, I have to put Donald Trump's word in front of it and say fake Christian leaders or fake evangelicals or you know, fake religious leaders, because that's exactly what they are. They have one standard for Mr. Trump, and then they have another standard for the rest of us. And those are the same people you'll find that are pushing hard against loving their neighbor, as the brother earlier said, when they're trying so hard to kick young people out of this country instead of finding a way for a solution for the DACA young people. So it's disturbing that our country has sunk to this, but I think that this has to be the thing that finally will bring these religious leaders and others in the Congress and to their senses, and let us just pray for Mr. Mueller and hope that he can get through this more quickly, do a thorough job, and get through this more quickly. And I think in the end, we're going to find that this president has to go. We cannot continue to bear this in our country. We're better than this.
Faye Williams, the Pride of Alexandria and chair of the National Congress of Black Women, we thank you for joining us today. It's always good
thank
to
you.
Hear from you, Faye.
Thank you so much, Jim. And I'm still a daughter of Louisiana. I love my state, but we've got some things that we've got to take care of down there. And I'm proud of those black women who are mayors of cities. I hope it's going to prove to be good for the state.
Thank you, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Jim.
And coming next, we're going to hear from Raymond Strother, the legendary political consultant, Hall of Famer at the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame and the Manship School of Mass Communication and the National Political Consultants Shrine as well. Ray Strother, former editor of the Reveille and former campaign director for Gary Hart, who saw a candidate end up losing a presidential election as a result of a sexual misconduct allegation. We'll comment on the latest involving President Trump. Now the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. The legendary political consultant Ray Strother is going to join us in just a moment. But before we get his comments about this story simmering about the president and the prostitute, or president and the porn star, Stormy Daniels, who's from Baton Rouge, here's a Baker resident, Tony Perkins, who still lives in this area and commutes to Washington as head of the Family Research Council, commenting on President Trump's alleged misdeeds.
Well, if this behavior were occurring today, right now, as he is president of the United States, I can assure you that my support and the support of evangelicals would be dissipating very rapidly. But we're talking about something that occurred 10 years ago, among a number of things that occurred with this president prior to being president. And myself, along with a lot of evangelicals, were not supportive of him in the primary. In fact, I campaigned hard for one of his competitors.
Yep.
And it was when it was down to him and Hillary Clinton. He wanted to have the support of evangelicals, and he came to them saying, I'm going to pro-life justices. I'm picking a pro-life conservative running mate, and he embraced himself in the most conservative party platform ever. And yes, evangelicals, conservatives gave him a mulligan. They let him have a do-over. They said, we'll start afresh with you, and we'll give you a second chance. And there are people, evangelicals understand what a second chance means. And that's what that comment was made in the context of.
That's Tony Perkins on CNN commenting about forgiveness for Donald Trump, who allegedly had a relationship with a adult film star when his wife was at home with a four-month-old child, Barron, the son of the president and the first lady. Ray Strother, you've been around this block before as far as scandals involving presidential candidates. Gary Hart, who most people would recognize as a fine man, who's now been married, I think, 60 years to his wife, was run out of the 1988 race because of a relationship with Donna Rice. What's your take on what's happened in 30 years?
You know, it reminds me of a line Sam the Lion had in the Last Picture Show, where he said, I've been around this trashy behavior all my life. So it seems like it's a wheel that keeps turning around and around and around. However, there seems to be a great difference now. I am stunned. Now, I didn't know Stormy Davis was even from Baton Rouge. So I overheard you tell your audience that a few minutes ago. I was only plugged in here at the last of Faye Williams interview. But I'm stunned that there's been so little attention nationally to this scandal that he seems to be the president, I'm saying, seems to be getting away with it, not getting away with it, but not being damaged or bruised by it. He ignores it, which if I were advising him, I would advise him to do so. But he ignores it and goes his merry way, and people start making excuses for him, like Tony Perkins says, well, that was a long time ago. And it was, you know, a few years ago.
He was in his early 60s, so I don't know that this would be a youthful indiscretion.
No, I don't think so. But you know what they said about Gary Hart when the Donna Rice incident came up, that was indicative of his morals, his personality, and his character. So he didn't get a buy on that at all. But no longer is it an indication of one's character if time erases part of it, like a few years. Where's the limit? Is it 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Obviously, 10 years is fine. So if we discover something else that happened 2 months before he was inaugurated, is that okay? What's the new limit? It's something new going on that I don't know about.
Well, 20 years ago, President Clinton was impeached in large part because of a relationship with an intern. But he survived it. And unlike Gary Hart, when he had all these allegations swirling about him during the campaign in 1992 about Paula Jones and Jennifer Flowers and others, he just kept going. Did he set perhaps the standard now where politicians know that if they hang in there, they may be able to survive scandals of this kind?
Well, I think so. Remember the flap about that. I mean, it was a huge, huge thing in the nation's media. And if you're interested in Stormy Davis and Trump, there's very little in the mainstream media about that. They're on to other things. So there have been major things happen since Bill Clinton and today.
I'm amused that there was a pitcher for the Orioles a few years ago named Storm Davis. This lady, the former Stephanie Clifford, she's now Stormy Daniels, 38 years old, a graduate of Scotlandville Magnet High School, was a performer at the Old Gold Club here in Baton Rouge, according to reports. And wouldn't you know it, Raymond Strother, a sex scandal with a Louisiana connection.
Imagine that. Just imagine that.
Imagine going back to Blaze Starr and Earl Long.
And Earl Long, you know. Well, you know, there's one time I worked with a woman named Marcia Debrow, or I don't remember Esquire. I think it was Esquire magazine, on a story about sex in American politics, and it goes back a long way. You know, that's nothing new. There's always been rumors of sex in politics from the very, very first. Now, maybe not George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, but some of the first of our politicians. There's always been a scandal on the horizon having to do with sex. And I could say in my 320 campaigns I've done, I've run into it 20 or 30 times where it became a clear and present danger to the campaign.
877-217-5757 to talk with Ray Strother. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on the air with Raymond Strother.
Hi, Jim. Hey, Mr. Strother. I've got to say, just looking at our history, it seems like you never go wrong by underestimating the intelligence of the American voter. They have a short attention span. They expect instant gratification. And like Donald Trump, you know, they watch Fox News while eating cheeseburgers. So my question is, I think that Bush or Jeb and another Republican who running had been elected, that they would be pretty much doing the same thing. So there's a silver lining here as far as Trump goes, because a lot of people find this to be unacceptable. Thanks.
Will this potentially gut the president? Does he have a chance to win re-election, or is this going to be his ultimate undoing?
Is that question directed
to
me or
for you?
Oh, I don't think it'll be his undoing. We just heard Tony Perkins say, "Oh well, it's not a big deal." If the right-wing evangelicals don't condemn him and they say it's okay, who's going to take up the parent call of this man not being morally fit for office?
All right. Well,
I don't see how it's going to affect his presidency that much. I really don't.
This is from Brandon asking about President Obama, saying would he be condemned by evangelicals if he had had a relationship with a porn star?
Of course he would have. It would have been a huge hoorah. Everybody forgets that Obama conducted himself and his family conducted themselves in the highest manner when they were in the White House. So did, in effect, George Bush. You know, those men conduct themselves very well in the White House. This is something brand new for us. Now, it's gone on in the past, as you say, with Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. But this is sort of a new low for us right now.
Well, you ran Bill Clinton's campaigns for governor when he was winning five times the governorship in Arkansas.
I did.
And what do you think he thinks of this?
Well, I think he probably winces every time he hears something, because anytime there's a sexual scandal, it can't make him happy to be brought into it, because for every sexual scandal, he becomes part of the conversation. And it's a stain on his presence and on him personally that he'll live with the rest of his life.
Well, the president, he is a married man, his third marriage, but I can't imagine the first lady likes these stories either.
I can't imagine. She seems to sort of sit in the background or shrink to the background in all public occasions. But I'm sure that she's not happy with this. But, you know, I don't judge another person's marriage.
But what if she left him? Would that hurt him?
I kind of doubt it. I hate to be so cynical. But we've become so tribal, we've become so polarized, that we'll have Tony Perkins saying, well, you know, these things happen, but we'll forgive him. No, you know, as long as you have people like Tony Perkins, and Faye Williams used the word, I only caught the last 30 seconds for a conversation, but she used the word hypocritical. I have to say amen, sister.
So is Trump an aberration, or is this a new day? Are we going to have people who are flawed? Like we just saw the governor of Missouri is in hot water over a sex scandal, and he's in real trouble in Missouri, but he has to be thinking, my goodness, I didn't consort with a porn star. What's the big deal?
Well, the former governor of North Carolina, wasn't he the governor? Went hiking, or was it South Carolina? went hiking in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, he's back,
was
back
in South
in
America with a girlfriend. Well, he's in Congress. He was elected in Congress by the same crowd. So I hate to be cynical, as I said. I think highly of my country, but my country is disappointing me.
Well, Ray Strother, always good to talk with you. And Raymond Strother, by the way, is back teaching at Northwestern State University in beautiful Natchitoches this semester. We're glad you're back from Montana, at least for a while. We'll see you in Baton Rouge. Thank you, Ray.
Great. Thanks.
Take care. See you soon. And we're coming next. We'll switch gears and talk about a few items with some interesting guests. Stay tuned. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. George Ann Meir is with us. She's president of the Greater Baton Rouge Learning Disabilities Coalition. And good morning to you, George Ann.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, your job is to help kids with learning disabilities. This is a great endeavor, but easier said than done. What all does your organization do?
Well, our main project is that we have a conference every year. It's coming up on February 3rd at the Catholic Life Center. It's free to the community. And we have volunteer speakers from our community that come in and tell parents and professionals how they can help kids with learning disabilities. We also have a website with resources and information, and we also help families try to figure out some solutions to their problems. So we just try to help the community and help the kids with learning disabilities.
On a percentage basis, how many kids have what would be classified as a learning disability?
It's a lot. It's 1 in 5, and it affects so many parts of our community and also the lives of families that have kids with learning disabilities.
20%?
Yes.
Like dyslexia, would that be considered a learning disability?
It is. We count anything as a learning disability that gets in the way of doing well in school. So it can be dyslexia, ADHD. Kids on the autism spectrum sometimes have trouble in the classroom. We have dysgraphia, which is trouble with writing, is another thing that we'll be talking about. We have somebody from McMaine's talking about handwriting at the conference.
Handwriting?
Yes.
How is that classified as a disability?
Well, sometimes one of the, just like with dyslexia, the brain might have trouble learning to read. You can have trouble learning to write, and that can be very debilitating in the classroom when you have to copy off the board or take notes or things like that.
Well, in this day and time with computers and cell phones, is it important to write any longer? Does that really matter?
Well, that's something that we like to remind the teachers when they're putting a lot of pressure on our kids who have learning disabilities, and they're trying to prepare them maybe for a world that's in the past. So we try to find all the technology we can for our students, because to have a learning disability diagnosis, you have to have an average or above average IQ. So these are great assets to our community, and we want to give them all the tools that they need to be successful.
We're visiting with George Ann, who is the president of a fine organization, the Greater Baton Rouge Learning Disability Coalition. George Ann Meir, how did the organization begin?
Well, we are just a small group of volunteers, and over 10 years ago, we started putting this conference on. After Katrina, there was really no resources for people to get information. So we started putting the conference together first, and then we became a nonprofit so that we could get some donations and grow. We had a great asset a couple of years ago when the digital arts students from Lee High School took us on as a project. So they created our website, they create our materials, and they support us at the conference. And so that's been a great asset.
Well, your website, unless something's changed, is www.ldhelp.org, right?
Yes, sir.
That's ldhelp.org. And this conference is February 3rd, which means it'll be a week from Saturday, Catholic Life Center.
It's free.
Acadian Thruway, right?
Right. And we also give CEUs to social workers, counselors, speech therapists, teachers, parents. We have foster parents that come to the conference, so it's for everybody.
And the best way to reach you is through the website?
Right. We have a link to register for the conference and then to get in touch with us if you need more information.
But if you know some child who has a learning disability, this is an opportunity to have your voice heard. And it is, once again, ldhelp.org. Thank you, George Ann Meir, and we commend you for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much.
We're joined for a few minutes by Fairley Jackson, who's been with us before, who heads Preserve Louisiana, and she is involved in all kinds of endeavors in our community. And it seems like each week there's a new event, and this one is certainly it's an unusual one. Tell us what's going on.
It is. Thank you so much for having me, Jim. Yeah, it does feel like we're celebrating something wonderful or discussing something powerful every week over at the old governor's mansion. So Preserve Louisiana is presenting a Lanyap lecture tomorrow evening, and it is a Lanyap lecture, The History of Gay Carnival. So this kind of came to be because I am honored to serve on the board of the Louisiana State Museum, and I'm actually now the chair of the Collections Committee. And Wayne Phillips, who is the curator of costumes and textiles, keeps presenting these accessions to our committee, which means an accession is something coming into the museum
right,
for our care for perpetuity. And he has really expanded the LGBTQ collection related to Carnival. And it's exquisite pieces, wonderful memorabilia, and I thought, we really need to have a lecture about this history. It's very rich. you know, in Baton Rouge, we have the Crew of Apollo, which I've been lucky to attend the last 5 years. It's become my favorite ball. It is the most visually stimulating, you know, ball I've ever been to. And my dad used to be an Endymion. So, you know, there's some comparison there, but.
But it's the history of Gay Carnival, and where will this be?
So we'll be at the Old Governor's Mansion tomorrow. And
that's your headquarters, right?
That is our headquarters. We're the stewards of the Old Governor's Mansion, Preserve, Louisiana. And we'll start at 6. The doors will open, and we'll have some wine and hors d'oeuvres provided by Calandro's. And then Wayne Phillips will do a nice lecture talking about the history of Gay Carnival. And then we will have some costumes for people to view. Mm-hmm. And Miss Erlin, who is Miss Gay Louisiana, and John Salinger, a former King of the Crew of Apollo Baton Rouge, and some artifacts for people to thumb through. And then we'll enjoy the tunes of the Nick Abraham Quintet and cocktails by Calor Street Grill and River Room.
Nick Abraham, a fine gentleman who made his announcement that he is gay on this show. So he is a psychologist, or I think that's his right title, and he's a fine musical performer as well.
He is, and a great friend.
Yeah. Well, that's tomorrow night. What time do you get started?
We'll start at 6, and that's when the doors will open, and the lecture will start promptly at 6:30.
Okay. Now, another listener, Stephen, asks about a previous topic that you spoke about on this show, and that was the tax credits that were under siege, at least for a while, and then the tax bill came and went, and you survived.
We survived, you know, and I have to say it is really thanks to Senator Cassidy's efforts and the amendment that he created initially. And, you know, there's just a small change. There's an amortization where developers and owners have to take that tax credit over 5 years, but we did preserve it at the 20% level. So we are incredibly grateful for that. And on to the next.
It was a huge accomplishment, and there is, as we've talked before, ample evidence of how that tax credit has been used in this community.
Absolutely. You know, and on the national level, and this has even been acknowledged by the National Trust for Historic Preservation, Louisiana leads in these types of projects and utilization of the tax credit. And thus, we were a driving force in preserving this credit. So I'm so grateful to everyone, including listeners who contacted their representatives, to the rest of our coalition, and our Preserve Louisiana members.
Well, it's a big development because it could have affected many projects that are ongoing and perhaps those in the works, and there's much work still to be done.
There is. I mean, just here in Baton Rouge, we've got several buildings that would qualify for this, several projects that are still, you know, in kind of that R&D mm-hmm. phase that we're all counting right on this tax credit.
And another question from Tracy at the Capitol asking if a building has to be on the National Register of Historic Places to qualify for the tax credit.
It doesn't. There's a couple of different parameters. You know, our cultural districts, historic districts, buildings in those areas are eligible. Commercial buildings. We no longer have a residential tax credit.
But commercial buildings of a certain age?
Yes, there's cultural and architectural arguments you can make. So I'd say the best thing to do is to contact us. You can find all of our information mm-hmm. at preserve-louisiana.org and send us a note, and we can start looking into things for people.
And back to the earlier topic, tomorrow night at the Old Governor's Mansion where Huey Long held court for a brief period. His legacy is immense, and that is one of the buildings that certainly reflects the Kingfish. But there will be a history of Gay Carnival, and who all will be featured other than Nick Abraham?
Yeah, so we'll have Miss Gay Louisiana, Erlin, and she is also Miss National Apollo, which is quite an honor. So she'll be there. John Salinger, who is a former King of Apollo, and lots of neat costumes and artifacts to look at, and lots of rich history to be explored.
And your website is?
Preserve-Louisiana.org.
Preserve-Louisiana.org. And George Ann Meir, who was with us a few moments ago from the Greater Baton Rouge Learning Disabilities Coalition, her website is ldhelp.org. ldhelp.org. We thank both of you. Tomorrow we are slated to hear from the fabulous writer James Lee Burke, back in a big way with his 21st book about Dave Robichaux, the Louisiana crime solver. And James Lee Burke is a true Louisiana legend. He now lives in Montana, but like Ray Strother, who now lives in Montana, he does come back this way every now and then. and we will talk with him telephonically from his home in Montana. Until then, for Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.